Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Faraduni et al. Titled, Acute Exposure to Progesterone Attenuates Cardiac Contraction by Modifying Myofilament Calcium Sensitivity in the Female Mouse Heart. This article published online October 28, 2016. Joining me today are Editor-in-Chief Irv Zucker, Lead Author Susan Howlett, and Content Expert Lee Delbridge. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara, and thank you, Susan and Lee, for participating in this discussion. The discussion concerning the use of male and female animals, especially in rodents, in biomedical research has reached a peak in the scientific community of late. You need really good justification for not using both sexes right now. The paper that we will discuss today may shed some light on the importance of examining both sexes. It's well known that there are many adaptive changes in the cardiovascular system that take place during pregnancy. For instance, blood volume and cardiac output both increase and peripheral vascular resistance decreases. However, the current study focuses on the effects of progesterone at the myocyte level, both electrophysiologically and mechanically, and provide some surprising new data. Susan, can you briefly outline the rationale, the methodology, and the main results you found in this study?
Certainly. So the idea that sex steroid hormones have acute effects on the heart is a kind of an interest of mine. And I was reading the literature and found some intriguing, really early papers that showed that if you acutely applied progesterone, you could inhibit contraction in multicellular ventricular muscle. The mechanism, though, you know, by which this was happening wasn't known. And because the effects could be seen at progesterone concentrations as low as even 100 nanomolar, which is actually physiological levels, especially in the setting of pregnancy, and because these negative inotropic effects could be really important, particularly if there's some kind of underlying cardiovascular disease in someone who's pregnant, I thought it would be important to try and look at the mechanisms responsible for this inhibitory effect on contraction. So what we decided to do was to take male and female C57 BLAC6 mice. They were adults, and we exposed the cells in hearts to progesterone concentrations at about 0.1 micromolar and 1 micromolar. And we did some studies in the presence and absence of a progesterone antagonist. We did also use a calcium sensitizer. We did simultaneous recordings of contractions and calcium transients in most myocytes. We did field stimulation studies. And we also voltage clamped the cells. And we did electrophysiology, recording action potentials and calcium currents, and looked at the content of the sarcoplasmic reticulum. And then finally, we looked at the myofilament sensitivity to calcium. And the major result that we found was that in field-stimulated myocytes, progesterone markedly slowed and attenuated contractions, but it had no effect on the underlying calcium transients. The effect was rapid. It happened within 2 or 3 minutes, and it was blocked by a progesterone receptor antagonist. What was really interesting was we found this effect in cells from female animals, but not in cells from male animals. We even saw this effect when we controlled action potential duration by voltage clamping the cells. So even though there was a small change in action potential duration, a shortening caused by progesterone, even when we eliminated that by voltage clamping the cells, we still saw this effect. Progesterone had no effect on the sarcoplasmic reticulum content or calcium transients and calcium currents. But we did find that progesterone in biochemical assays reduced myofilament calcium sensitivity. And again, this happened only in hearts from females when they were perfused with progesterone, not in hearts from males. And we could actually overcome the effects of progesterone on the cells by treating the cells with a calcium sensitizer, levosimendan. And so I think that the work really nicely illustrates that if you were only to have conducted the study on cells from males, which would be the default position of a lot of labs, you wouldn't have actually concluded that progesterone did anything. And actually in women, where progesterone levels could be really important, you would have missed this observation.
That's a great overview of really interesting and perhaps somewhat unexpected data. Lee, could you comment on what the implications of this work might be and how it fits into perhaps the, I wouldn't call it a syndrome, but into pregnancy?
In undertaking this study, Dr. Howlett and her team have tackled a really important and understudied aspect of cardiac pathophysiology. The work's very elegant and it's very comprehensive from a cellular point of view. I think it's interesting in the pregnancy context because that's a volume-loaded state. So what Susan and her group are reporting, that in that situation where there needs to be an inotropic response to manage the volume load, there is also an offsetting negative inotropic effect. So there's some kind of regulatory process happening there that we did not previously know anything about. So I think this is the beginning of something really important. And I think there are also some aspects of this study that have more general relevance too. And I would like to ask Susan a little more about this. Many researchers are concerned about variation in female rodent oestrus status being a confounding experimental problem. And Susan, I would be very interested in your comments in relation to this concern. Do you think it's valid?
Well, thank you for that question. That's a great question, Lee. As I said earlier, I think that this study is an excellent example of why we can't simply do experiments in males, and we would have actually concluded progesterone had no effect. So I think you can miss some important findings if you don't look at both sexes. And of course, there's many other studies that would bear this out as well. I think that there's this belief in the scientific community that the oestrus cycle in females causes heterogeneity that you simply can't deal with in doing experiments. And there have been actually several meta-analyses, including work that I cite in the paper, that have looked at hundreds, literally hundreds of articles in mice. And there's a more recent one in rats. And they have shown that the data collected in female animals is not inherently more heterogeneous on a huge number of different biological traits. So males and females appear to have similar heterogeneity. And in fact, in the mouse literature, males were arguably somewhat more heterogeneous than females. I think there's a fair number of factors at play, but one of them is in a paper we published in 2014 in the American Journal of Physiology, Heart. We actually induced cycling in the mice because we tried to see whether the oestrus cycle would affect cardiac contractile function. We had to induce cycling because the animals, female animals housed in groups, don't spontaneously cycle. They certainly don't exhibit regular oestrus cycles with any frequency at all. We swabbed lots of animals over time. And it turned out that we were becoming aware of a phenomenon that's been known since the 1950s called the Lee Boot effect, whereby pheromones from females housed in groups actually suppress oestrus cycling in their cage mates. It's not a perfect system, but for sure we didn't see animals with regular oestrus cycles when we followed them for weeks on end. We had to induce cycling in order to demonstrate that. So probably the animals aren't actually cycling with any great regularity in many cases. The other thing is that there seems to be an idea that there's no variation in testosterone levels in male animals, but again, in animals housed in groups, there's social dominance hierarchies in males, and there's evidence that testosterone levels differ markedly depending on your position in that hierarchy. So for those reasons, I think it's not right, proper, or scientifically justified to do experiments on simply one sex and ignore the other. And it would be the same if you did all your experiments on females as if you did all your experiments on males. I think you could be missing something really important.
I think that the funding agencies, the NIH and other funding agencies around the globe would agree with you now. And I think the onus is going to be on the scientific community to look at physiological function in both sexes. Let me ask you one other question concerning the whole concept of intrinsic contractility in pregnancy. We know that cardiac output is up, and that seems to be, at least in part, a volume-dependent phenomenon. Is there anything known about intrinsic contractility down at the mechanical protein contractile machinery level?
That's a really interesting question, and it's certainly worth noting and emphasizing that the cells that we looked at weren't actually working against a load. To the best of my knowledge, no one has actually looked at either acute or chronic effects of progesterone on contractions in myocytes that were loaded, you know, for example, using a myostretcher. And that would be a very interesting experiment to do. There is some evidence, again, echocardiography, so, you know, the load could vary, but there's some evidence in a pregnancy model in mice that I found that left ventricular ejection fraction could decline. But certainly, I don't think that anyone, again, to the best of my knowledge, has looked at the effects of progesterone or pregnancy in cells that were stretched. I think it's a nice idea.
great. Lee, anything further?
Yes, I have another question. I'm thinking that these results that Susan has shown in vitro are really quite dramatic in terms of the negative inotropic impact of progesterone. And I'd be interested to have her comment about how they might translate into the in vivo setting.
We haven't actually done any in vivo experiments ourselves, but think that that would be very interesting to do. I think it would be nice to look at contractile function with echo to see if we could investigate what elevated progesterone levels would do to fractional shortening and perhaps ejection fraction. It would also be interesting to see whether progesterone could alter diastolic function with that lens. The effects on time course of contraction were equally impressive to the effects on the amplitude of contraction. So if it slows contraction, that would be, I think, important to know, especially in view of diastolic dysfunction. In terms of in vivo, we do know that cardiac output goes up in the setting of pregnancy. That's probably because volume goes up and heart rate goes up. Although late in pregnancy, when progesterone levels are highest, actually there's evidence in humans and even, as I mentioned earlier, in the mouse model, that ejection fraction actually can go down, perhaps towards baseline levels in humans and then even below baseline in the mouse model. So it is possible that this effect of progesterone is damping out some of these other influences. The lead author, Hired Faradouni, is now a PhD student in my lab, but he started out as honestly a second-year university student in my lab, and I hired him to do a little work in the summer, and he was really good. He had good hands, and he was really interested. So he just kind of kept coming back, and he's now been in my lab for many years. He started this progesterone project. It was his honors thesis for his biochemistry undergraduate degree. He was helped by Jennifer McDonald, who did a master's in my lab. And then Angelika Meyer is a new student in my lab who's come from Nepal, and she's starting graduate work. So the first three authors are all early career investigators, and it's been kind of a nice collaboration working with them.
Well, I want to thank you both for participating in this very interesting discussion of a paper that's likely to have a significant impact in the way we think about how to do rodent research, especially, and probably implications beyond that. So once again, thank you very much, and I'll turn it back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.